The Real Estate Unsuccess Stories podcast features people from the real estate community sharing real stories about their struggles, pains, and even losses during their own real estate journey. We share these real experiences so you can learn from them and build a successful journey of your own. Now, here's your host, Cody Lewis, one of the managing partners at Vindu Capital, located in Charleston, South Carolina.
Hey everyone, I'm so excited to have you back, but I got to tell you, I'm even more excited about our guest today. He is the founder and managing principal at Viking Capital, Mr. Vikram Raya. Vikram, thanks for joining us today. How are you?
Cody, man, I am just thrilled and pumped up, brother.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks for joining us. And peek behind the curtain for those that are listening. We've been enjoying each other's company for a while. We had to actually remind ourselves to hit record. So it's a pleasure to have you on and even better to meet you. For those that maybe haven't seen you in the community, haven't seen your stuff out there, would love to get a background on where you're from, how you got into real estate, and what kind of real estate you find yourself in these days.
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, in all honesty, I shouldn't even be here. I should be in an emergency room somewhere putting a stent in someone's heart. But you know what? Sometimes you don't get your dreams, but you get your destiny. And What I wanted to do was, like, you know, growing up, I was like, oh man, I got to be a doctor. And then, you know, I had people in my family have heart problems. I had 6 people in my family die of heart attacks. My father collapsed in front of me. I was like, okay, I got to figure this out. So I studied medicine at Georgetown, became a cardiologist after I trained in Milwaukee, came back to the DC area. I'm like, all right, I'm ready to practice. But part of me, you know, I have to blame Robert Kiyosaki for this, but reading Rich Dad Poor Dad and more importantly, Rich Dad Poor Dad Part 2, which many of your listeners don't read, they just stick to Rich Dad Poor Dad Part 1. You got to read Cashflow Quadrant, because what happens is you get all this light bulb aha moments. And I realize that if I stay as just a traditional doctor, there's nothing wrong with that. I'll have what we call the golden handcuffs. And whether you're a lawyer, I think your wife's a lawyer, whether you have, you're a high income professional, a physician, you know, someone who's going to trade dollars for hours, who's a W-2, who is comfortable, but not free. That's what I didn't want to be. I didn't want to be enslaved by the system, meaning I didn't want to be in sort of like the sort of golden jail, you know? And so I wanted freedom. And what came to me was the 5 freedoms. And I wanted to have financial freedom, number one, which everyone talks about. But I want to share with your listeners the other 4 freedoms, Cody. So number 2 is time freedom. I wanted to have freedom to do whatever I wanted, whenever I wanted. 3 is geographic freedom. And that was accelerated by COVID. And COVID gave me some setbacks, but also opened up the whole world to me. And then number 4 is, you know, vitality freedom. You know, most people are okay health-wise, but very few people are brimming with vitality, energy. They can't, energy is a new currency, Cody. And I want more people to have it. And then finally, freedom from stress, right? Your whole podcast is based on the premise of these huge setbacks, failures, disasters, catastrophes, things that like would shift someone to the core. But literally having a resilient, bulletproof mindset is taking those things and imbibing it into your DNA, almost figuring out how this is going to level you up to that next level, 10x your life, and say, thank God that happened to me. So anyway, those 5 freedoms prompted me to then start doing real estate on the side. So I started doing single family, you know, home investing. And my first house was $26,000. And then I, at some point I was like, hey, look, this is great, but I want to go to that next level. And that was multifamily. And so I started, you know, reading about multifamily, going to conferences, books, seminars, going to my local RIA clubs. And, one of my buddies, Ravi Gupta, and I said, hey, you know what, let's form a multifamily company. And so we sold all our single family assets. We cashed out. And it was a nice chunk of change, but it's nothing to retire you. And so I was like, you know what, let's do this. And so one of the things I wanted to do was raise capital. And I'll tell you a story that fits your criteria of the unsuccess real estate story. So I was like, all right, where do I raise capital from? And my wife gave me a rule. You're not allowed to use your own cardiology money. You're not allowed to use our income because we work too darn hard for it. I don't trust you yet. You know, she didn't say that, but I could
yeah,
tell that.
Right. Yeah. Giving you those eyes.
Right. She's like, you better not mess it up. Right. So then I was like, all right, well, I can't use my own money. And how do I raise capital. So I read books, I learned it. I Googled, hey, raising capital. And then there's like, oh, accredited investor list. Oh, great. So I paid like, I don't know, a couple $100. I got this accredited investor list. And then I started contacting these people and they were very, you know, distinguished people, Mr. Green, Mr. White. I was like, it sounds like a game, a board game or a Clue, right?
Right.
So
right.
I called this guy, Mr. Green, Mr. White. They're like, yeah, we'll fund your deals. Yeah, just wire us some money using Western Union and we'll fund your deal. So I'm like, all right, I'm wiring like $500. I have to go to the grocery store, Western Union. And dude, like I never got my money back. I was like, man, this is a whole, and I told my dad, like, dude, you just got scammed. And so, you know, with egg on my face, embarrassed, you know, just got scammed, thought this, all these accredited investors were not, you know, it's all fake. So I was like, all right, you know what? I respect my wife, but in fact, my profession is actually my secret weapon. And that's what I realized using where you are. If you're a lawyer, realize that there's a ton of lawyers around you who are interested in investing. I'm a doctor. I'm like, man, that's a secret weapon. Most doctors, no offense to all the doctors listening, you guys are horrible investors, right? They're very smart, and that's almost their downfall. They're too smart. And they don't understand the principles of investing sometimes because they haven't had the education. And so, you know, people say it's not the investment that's risky, it's the investor. And so once I realized that, I was like, all right, let me tap into this. And so, you know, we didn't have the capability to do our own deal at the beginning. So we started, you know, joint venturing and doing deals. And so we raised, you know, our goal is to raise $250K for our first deal in Atlanta in 2015. And we're like, man, we're sweating bullets. I don't know if we can even do it. We ended up raising $750K. It was amazing. So we're like, yes, okay, awesome. And, you know, I was still working full time as a cardiologist. I had two kids. I had a wife who was a doctor. I was doing Spartans and Tough Mudder races, you know, supporting my family, doing all these other things while doing multifamily sort of as a side hustle. And to all those people listening who want to do something else besides their main thing, do it the way I did it, which is the unrisky way, right? Wait till your side hustle exceeds your main hustle, then you can start pivoting over and do it in a gradual way. I went from 5 days a week cardiology, no days real estate to 5 days and real estate nights and weekends to 5 days to 4 days a week, one day, and then 3 days and 2 days and like that, slowly wean myself off, right? It's not worth the risk, the stress to just cut everything and just go, you know, go do your passion unless you have like a significant amount of money stored away. You want your wife to still be your wife, your husband to still be your husband. You want your kids. You want to be able to pay your mortgage. So all things are going well. We are like, you know what? We can do this on our own. So after about three deals of sort of partnering with other folks, we're like, you know what? We can do this on our own. And so Ravi and I said, hey, look, let's find a deal. And we did it. And then our first deal, man, it was amazing. We got it for like $35K a door. It was in Atlanta, 118 units. I think we bought it for like $3.5-4 million. We ended up selling it for almost like, you know, we bought the deal next door that was distressed, a lot of stress to go through that. But I don't want that to be the highlight of our unsuccess story. I have even a better one for you guys. So we ended up all in all, we had 7 or 8 million into it. We ended up selling for 13 million 2 years later. So we're like, cha-ching,
right?
This works. I'm like, all right, we can do this. And so our eyes got a little bit big and we're like, our next deal was a $35 million deal. And this is where things started getting interesting.
Gotcha.
So well,
yeah, tell me a little bit about that. Cause I know you talked a little bit about the capital raise being a little bit of a challenge at first. And I think what I heard, a couple of running themes, I even heard what you were saying, making sure that one, your mindset is in the right place, that there's oftentimes in what we talk about here, you're going to slip up, you're going to fail, you're going to be unsuccessful. But as long as you have the right mindset and you're learning from it, that's the most important thing. And then the other one was making sure you find and understand who your avatar is. Who are you going after for capital raising, for identifying folks that are going to be listening to your thought leadership platform, whatever it is, understand who your avatar is. But sounds like you have an even better story going through that even larger deal after your first one.
All right, Cody. So I wanted to tell your listeners really the biggest lesson I've ever learned in real estate. And there's multiple lessons all rolled into one. So after our initial success with that major deal, which was, you know, phenomenal, our investors were thrilled. I mean, they had close to a 39% annualized return. It was crazy. We're like, okay, let's start, you know, considering larger projects. And so we had done, you know, four deals at that point. So we're like, all right, our next deal, and we got it sort of off market. It was a $33 million deal. It was sold as a loan assumption. We ended up getting new debt on it. And so the price went up to 35. And we're like, all right, so we thought, hey, look, this is a big deal. I don't know if we can handle it on our own. So we thought, hey, look, let's bring on partners. So I know you've been doing this podcast for a while. You've had a lot of guests on. And I guarantee you, I would say 35% of all issues come from having partnerships. So let's talk about partnerships. So we're like, all right, well, we've heard partners can be good or bad. So how do we know we're going to get a good partner? Well, think about it. If we're getting multifamily education from like a and I won't mention any names or educators or anything. It's like, hey, look, if you go to a training program and that person who's teaching the program is there, and you think, hey, that's a great partner. And so we're like, all right, you know, these people were, you know, they're well-versed in asset management. We're like, all right, that's exactly who we want. So boom, right. We brought them on board. They brought another person that they, you know, they knew. And so all of us all sort of joined in to do this project. And, you know, it was already starting to get, everything starts with enthusiasm and excitement until, you know, you have to start making decisions. And then we realized, you know, nothing right or wrong. And in the end, I and Ravi, we take ultimate responsibility for the deal, no matter what. You cannot blame other people, because even if you blame, quote unquote, your partners, who brought them on? We did, right? So in the end, if you relinquish responsibility, you relinquish control. So once, you know, we realize, hey, look, it is our duty to make this happen no matter what. So the difficulty with partnerships was we move at different speeds, number one. Number two, we moved at different speeds. Number two, we had different priorities in which to attack the acquisition, the capital raise. Number three, if the main person driving the deal does not have operational control, you're essentially become neutered. And that's what happened. So we... one of the lessons we've learned from that is always retain operational control. If you have the most amount of assets or the most equity coming into the deal or the most at to risk or to lose. And we brought the majority of the money. We are the bigger group. We are the, you know, we found the deal. So it literally should have been our operational control. But what happened was we had 40% control of the deal and the other two groups had 30% each. So when you add it together, they would vote as a block and we would always get outvoted. Yeah. So that's a critical, critical, critical important lesson for your listeners. Please retain operational control if you're going to be the main person on the deal. And number two is capitalization. What does that mean? That means how much money do you have to do all the business plan? And so we had put in a conservative amount of money to do the business plan. But what I've realized is for deals like this, there's always things you don't realize. And so we were undercapitalized. So $35 million deal, now going retrospect, I should have had $3.5 million in reserves ready to go for to do the deal. And we had about 1.5, maybe 1.8. So undercapitalized. And so what that means is, let's say new things come across in your business plan that you didn't realize were there. How are you going to pay for it? One, capital call, which is not an option for us ever. We never want to do that. Two, take money out of our own pockets, which we did. Three, you have to hold distributions for a period of time, sometimes in the middle of the deal. And sometimes we had to do that. And so that was very painful because we've never had to do that before that or since that. We've done 16 deals, Cody. Our average annualized return now is about, I don't know, 26% for our investors, including this project. We're crushing every single deal we touch. This is the one deal that taught us this important lesson. And, you know, we have friends, we have family, right? What I learned was, as I told you, the secret weapon is instead of running away from your profession, use your profession. And so, you know, I have all these physicians who trust us and doctors and lawyers and friends and family and cousins and aunts and uncles and things. So, you know, it was so important for us to make sure we executed on our projects. And so, and we have on every other project. This was the one that was really, you know, these are just lessons to learn as you go through it. And if an operator repeats the same mistakes over and over again, please don't invest with them. But everyone's going to have a rough deal. All my mentors out there that are who I admire and respect and sort of emulate my company after, everyone's had their that deal, you know, that either went sideways or that was rough. And if they don't, they're lying to you, because it can't go. I mean, even people who run mutual funds or, you know, stock brokers or S&P 500 managers or whatever, they can't pick all the stocks right. So, I mean, our record is what? And in the end, you know, I'll tell you what happens at the end. But for now, you know, it was we ended up owning it for almost 2.5-3 years, under capitalization. Also, the progress of completing the business plan. And we at Viking Capital are lightning speed. We do everything in 18 months or less. Full execution of the business plan. This took us almost 2.5 years. Why? Agreeing a three-headed monster to agree upon contractors, vendors, bids. It just, everything was just so much slower. You know, like me and Ravi, literally it's a text. We make a decision. We interview three contractors. Boom, we're done. The next day, they're actually starting to work. The other thing was property management company. We, instead of us doing our full vetting of the property management company, we trusted our partners and said, hey, look, we've used this one. They're awesome. We recommend them. Within 6 weeks of owning the property, we had to say, no, they're no good. We fired them. And then we brought the second property management company on, whom has a really very good reputation, but it's not the one we've been using, you know, since then. And before that, like, the property management company we use is phenomenal. They've actually created an internal division for they manage like 200,000 units all over the country, and they created a Viking Capital inner division just for us. And so, you know, we realized not having a property management company that is in sync and can pitch and catch with you, is nimble with you, can respond before you do, and sort of be more of a partner than versus an employee or a person you tell them to do, you know, was critical. So that's another thing we learned. If you don't have the property management company, even if you're perfect, your equity is perfect, your business plan is perfect, it can also slow you down. So that's another one. And then finally, it's just timing, right? And loan selection. So I'll talk about timing and loan selection next. So loan selection, we had a loan that's a long-term debt that it was a loan, we had defeasance on it. And defeasance means that it has to earn a certain number of interest. And so if you try to sell it before the time that the term is due, that means you have to owe money to the servicer because they want a certain return, if you will. And what happens is, in a high interest rate environment, defeasance is not a big deal. But when interest rates drop, defeasance does become a big deal. And who would have thought that, you know, we bought it like at a 4% interest rate, which was really good at the time. But this, you know, as the interest rates were dropping to threes and twos, it made it where selling it as a loan assumption was very expensive.
Gotcha. Well, yeah. And I think the big thing that I kept hearing in a lot of that is when you take a look at like Viking Capital and what you guys do and the speed and the execution that y'all have on everything, making sure that if you're taking on partners, you're bringing on partners, that they align with your expectations, your goals, everything that you do. Because if you don't, it sounds like there could be and potentially will be a lot of friction because they don't align, they don't execute the same way that you do. And maybe not always to the T, but making sure that you have the same, you're going to go about things the same way so that in the end, you can execute the business plan accordingly without having too many interruptions or friction points or whatever it may be, but making sure that you understand what you want to do and that your partners are going to do that as well seems to be kind of the underlying theme there of, before you go into a joint venture, flush that out. Am I kind of reading into that a little bit wrong?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I would say of all the sort of learning lessons, that selection of partner is the number one. And I would say, as a caveat to that, operational control of the deal.
Right. And partner being your actual JV partners, but also your partners in the folks you're going to get a loan from, your property manager, like all of these folks need to align with your overall business plan and strategies.
All in all, we ended up, you know, doing the renovation, doing everything we're supposed to do. And our investors still were made a profit. We ended up giving a reasonable return. We, as a GP team, did the honorable thing and made sure all our profits were just forwarded to our investors. And so that's what another lesson is. Play the long game, guys. We've made tremendous amounts of money in multifamily real estate. And again, if 15 out of our 16 deals are crushing it, that's awesome. So if a deal goes sideways, do the honorable thing. Always take care of your investors. Always think long-term. Always be transparent. Communicate openly and honestly with them from the very beginning. Let them know what's going on. Don't keep any surprises. And again, a powerful selection of your partners will lead to ultimate success. And the less partners you have, the more successful you'll be. So try to do things without partners. But if you need partners, choose the right ones. Retain operational control. And try to anticipate all these things that can happen to a deal before it happens, so you're prepared. You want to be over prepared and not necessarily have to use all those things that you have in your arsenal. And with that said, guys, I'd love for you to connect with me. I have a website link that you can find me on LinkedIn, linkwithvic.com. That's LinkWith, VIK.com. You'll get me straight and DM me on LinkedIn. Or our website is called VikingCapLLC.com. That's VikingCapLLC.com. Our company is called Viking Capital Investments. We're on track for about $300 million of acquisitions this year. We have a large team. We acquire multifamily assets in the Sun Belt area, 200 to 500 units. And you know, because of the lessons I learned, we're about to close on our latest deal, a 400 unit, $76 million project in Indiana. And you know, you need these lessons to go to your next successes. So remember this: success leaves clues, and failure gives you feedback. So get that and fail forward, fail early, fail often, and be uber successful.
Man, I love that. I'm going to steal that as the title of this episode right there. Vikram, thank you so much for joining us today. I very much appreciate it. And I appreciate the lessons you're sharing and being humble enough to come on and talk about some of the things that you did and what ultimately made you successful today. So I can't thank you enough.
Thanks, Cody.
Absolutely. Thanks everyone for joining us. We'll get everyone next time.
You've been listening to the Real Estate Unsuccess Stories podcast with Cody Lewis. Be sure to subscribe today on your favorite podcasting platform so you can catch every episode of the Real Estate Unsuccess Stories podcast.